Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
And here's a measure of how life expectancy is determined to a frighteningly large degree on where you live, even within the New York metro area. In southeast Westchester County, the average resident lives to 90 years old. In southwest Newark, the average resident lives to 73. That's a 17-year difference in life expectancy just within the New York metro area. And that's just one finding from a big new study of the New York metro area by a Brooklyn-based group called the Social Science Research Council. We'll get a pre-release preview now of their report called A Portrait of New York City, though it's really about the whole New York metro area, to be officially released this Thursday. The report, researched and produced by Measure of America, a program of the Social Science Research Council, is a comprehensive look at the residents of the city and the region based on an approach known as the Human Development Index. That was first developed by the United Nations, and the Human Development Index enables researchers to evaluate the overall well-being of a community, a city, a county, a state, a region, or even a country. That goes beyond some of the top-line stats we usually hear in the news, like gross domestic product. This takes into account health, access to educational opportunities, personal income, and more. And researchers can assign scores to the area under study, enabling comparisons to other communities or geographical areas. So with us now are Kristen Lewis, co-director of Measure of America and co-author of The Portrait of New York City, and Sheena Wright, president and CEO of the United Way of New York City, with a response to some of the numbers in the report. So Kristen and Sheena, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC today.
Thanks so much.
Let's just go down some of these very interesting measures, then we'll step back and look at the bigger picture. Kristen, can you expand on the dramatic variation in life expectancy within our metro area that I gave at the top? 90 years life expectancy in southeastern Westchester, 17 years less in southwest Newark.
Sure. So what we found in this report is that some New Yorkers and some people in the metro area are enjoying the highest levels of well-being in the country, and others have very limited capabilities, meaning that their choices and opportunities are really circumscribed. And one area that is so striking, as you say, is the area of life expectancy. So in the New York metro area, a baby born today, an Asian baby born today, for instance, can expect to live 86.6 years, whereas an African American baby can expect to live 77.9 years. So that's a huge difference in New York, and these differences are mirrored actually across the country.
10 years of life is a lot of life.
It's a lot of life. It's a lot of life.
Let's drill down a little bit on one of the areas that you measured, and that was income and income disparities. And you crunched these numbers by gender and by ethnic group, and some of the findings are so interesting. One of them is that women earn less than men in every racial and ethnic group, though the gap really varies. Can you give us a top line or two take on that?
Sure. So women live almost 5 years longer and are more likely to be enrolled in school and have high school, bachelor's, and graduate degrees. but they earn $12,500 less than men in the metro area. And this gap is more than double, say, the gender earnings gap in America's second largest city, which is Los Angeles, where the gap is about $6,000. But the gap really varies in the New York metro area. So in the metro area, white men, for instance, have typical wages and salaries of $60,000, and white women $40,000. So that's a $20,000 wage gap. Men are earning 50% more than women. But the gap is much smaller, for instance, among African Americans. So African American women earn $31,000 typical wages and salaries, and men 34 typical wages and salaries. So among African Americans, the gap is only $3,000.
And what do you make of that smaller gap? What does it really tell us?
Well, it would be nice to say that there's greater gender equality among African Americans, for instance, and maybe there is, but this is not a measure of that. This is really about the kind of wage discrimination and employment discrimination that African American men face.
Wow! Hey, yo, drama, hold up. Stop the motherfucking record.
All right.
I want you to pondy replay, drama. Pondy replay.
Let's give him one more chance, man. Run that shit the fuck back.
But the gap is much smaller, for instance, among African Americans. So African American women earn $31,000 typical wages and salaries, and men 34 typical wages and salaries. So among African Americans, the gap is only $3,000.
And what do you make of that smaller gap? What does it really tell us?
Well, it would be nice to say that there's greater gender equality among African Americans, for instance, and maybe there is, but this is not a measure of that. This is really about the kind of wage discrimination and employment discrimination that African American men face.
Yeah, because another way to look at the wage number, Sheena, is that the typical white worker living in New York City takes home $52,000 a year, which is more than $20,000 more than the typical black or Asian workers, and Latino workers on average make even less than that.
Absolutely. And I think what we also appreciate is that the wages for African American and Latino workers are not enough to make ends meet in the New York City metro area. And so there's a real challenge there in people's ability to be self-sufficient.
So does that mean that you're proposing policy solutions out of these numbers, based on these numbers?
Absolutely. So Measure for America is part of the report. You know, they help define these five very distinct New Yorks that exist across the metro area, but also have very specific goals and policy recommendations, goals around health, education, and earnings, with some specific policies that we need to do to have more of a balance. Their diagnosis allows us to differentiate programs and implementation to help the people that we care about.
And before we get to some of those specific proposals and the broader idea of the five New Yorks, and we'll give you a chance, Kristen, to just list the five New Yorks. They're very interesting categories. Just to stay on the wage gaps that you found, many people might be surprised by your finding that black and Asian American workers in the city make about the same. Many might assume that Asian Americans are doing much better than blacks on average. But that stat that I read before from your study, unless I'm misreading it, is that the average white worker in New York takes home $52,000 a year, more than $20,000 more than the typical black or Asian worker, which are both in the low 30s.
Yeah, so we calculated these scores both for the metro area as a whole and then also for New York City. So in the metro area as a whole, there's a big difference actually between Asian and black earnings. Asian Americans earn $41,000 or so, and African Americans about $32,000. So there's a big gap in the metro area. But in the city itself, you're quite right, they have very similar earnings. Whites earning around $52,000. And both Asians and African Americans earning around 32. The reason for that is that the education of Asians in New York City is quite split. So there's a very high share of people with bachelor's degree, but then there's also a very high share of newly arrived immigrants who don't have even a high school degree. So that accounts for that split.
And it's a very interesting finding that calls into question the category Asian American. A whole set of your findings seem to do that, and whether it's overly broad. For example, even the income disparities between Indian Americans and Bangladeshi Americans.
Yes, that's a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up. All of these categories from that are decided by the Office of Management and Budget at the White House, they're very broad. So we have African American, Asians, whites, and Latinos. So each of these categories is pretty internally diverse, but especially the category of Asian Americans. You know, you have people from all kinds of countries who've been here maybe for generations, maybe who've newly arrived. And you see huge disparity, and I think it's quite dangerous to assume that all Asians are doing great. You know, that's that whole minority, model minority myth. And it's really damaging to low-income Asians in particular.
And Sheena, one of them that really made my eyes pop out was the study found that Indian American men made $65,000 a year on average. Contrast that to Bangladeshi women who made $19,000.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what we see in our work on the ground in neighborhoods and communities are that Southeast Asian communities are really struggling, and certainly newly arrived immigrant families from China as well. And so as we're also thinking about implementation, execution, making sure that there's a level of cultural competency that appreciates the diversity of the Asian community is critical, because it's very diverse and very broad.
How do you explain, Kristen, the gender gap in wages between white men and white women, which you found to be the largest gender pay gap of any ethnicity? Is it simply that white men have such higher earnings than anybody else that, you know, the gap, even with white women who are higher than men or women in a number of other ethnic categories, is as big as it is?
Yes, definitely. So white men, by and large, earn the most, kind of by a mile, even though women have actually more education on average than men do. And, it just speaks to also the kinds of obstacles that women face professionally in terms of getting to the point where they're earning a lot. You know, women and men study different things. So men are more likely to study, say, engineering. Women are more likely to study psychology. That has real impact in terms of their first job, how much they're getting paid. Then women pay a real penalty when they have a child. You know, there's a real motherhood penalty. And women's earnings, for every child you have, your earnings decrease by 4%, whereas for men, the opposite is true. The earnings increase by 6% for every child they have. So somehow, men with children are taken more seriously in the workplace, and women with children less seriously.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. White women. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. First and foremost, Gus T. Renegade started yoga teacher training yesterday, class number one. So for the next 8 weeks until sometime toward the end of August, Gus will be hosting and participating in workplace racism. I generally said if you are a student, high school or whatever it is, grad school all the way through, that's basically work. And certainly whatever your career field is, whatever your job is, counts. But if you're in any sort of training, and I mean people that typically do teacher training, they're doing it with the hope of getting a job, like, you know, whether that's a full-time job or a part-time job, that is, you know, part of their career aim, even if, as I said, it's a side gig, as they call it. I have the freedom, relatively, within this eight-week training session to be able to, I'm not going through this looking to be hired by the studio where I'm training at. So I'm going really just to learn as much as I possibly can, still learning, learn as much as I can about the yoga practice and about racism, white supremacy, of course, and whatever else of constructive value as we are going through the training. But I am looking at this as a workplace situation. That's basically what we did. The first that we pulled out the manual policy and procedure. Talk about that on the broadcast all the time. Attendance policy and what the rules and regulations are, what you're going to be required to complete the class. Standard operating procedure. Go over all of that very carefully to make sure there are no surprises and that you know the rules as well as or better than the whites who will be enforcing them. Can be very helpful in a job situation, but I'll be looking forward to participate. In fact, forget call it. I don't even have to give out the number. I can start with my own incident of workplace racism. So we come in for the training yesterday, and I can even set the stage. I have so much freedom. Since this is yoga, I would normally go to do a yoga class. I would not have a shirt on. We had a heat wave in Seattle this week. It was 80 degrees every day. Well, it was 80 degrees like three consecutive days. And then today it went back to pattern. The temperature is currently 64 degrees. So it was a minor heat wave. I got some use out of Ivy's fan, but it was minor. So during that minor heat wave when it was 80 degrees, going to yoga class where I normally wouldn't have a shirt on, now it's 80 degrees and, you know, having lost 67 pounds, I'm with Emmy. I'm stunting for the whole summer. So, of course, I don't have a shirt on. Even though the new cow shirt came in, I got my cow shirt. I could have worn it, but it was 80 degrees. Forget that. So, go to class, training. And I don't know who's going to be in teacher training. So, that's part of it to see if I'm going to be the only Negro for teacher training. I get there and black female. I did get a heads up that this black female might be in attendance. Got there. I saw her. Was indeed the person that I thought. Gorgeous. Like, whoa. Natural hair. Amazing. She had her abs out and everything. She said she was not going to stick it through. She was just kind of coming to see if it was going to be a fit or not. But she said she was not going to stay because of sleep. She said she feels like she's already sleep deprived, and she did look like, you know, she's a little sleepy, and she said she didn't think it would be good for her sleep schedule. Black people, sleep, white supremacy. I just posted an article about that on the Facebook group this week. I was in the Washington Post where they were talking about black people getting substantially less sleep than white people. And they listed a lot of reasons. Workplace stress was on there. Racism, white supremacy was on there. I posted it. I can relate to that hugely, especially this year with the flood situation. But that stood out just because I talk about that. That's something that's really significant to me because sleep has been a problem for me for my entire life. And then I've been slowly finding out that for a lot of black people, period, the cows listeners, that has been a major problem. So I could totally relate. With her not being there, will be the only black person going through the training. Even if it's warm, I will at least have my shirt with me, ready to roll. And we do indeed have to teach a class in order to graduate. So if we have any cows listeners who are in the area, or if you want to take a trip to see lovely Seattle in the summertime, we have rooftop yoga in Seattle. I didn't even know they offered such a thing at the very studio where I'm training. They have rooftop yoga in the summertime. If you want to come to visit and take Gus T's class, it's in, I think it'll be like August 19th or 20th sometime. It's like the third week in August. I have a exact date and time as it gets closer to all of that, unless I flunk out or racism, white supremacy forces me out of the program between now and then. But August 19th or August 20th, one of those days, if you want to come, class will be free. You can come take the class. That would be great. That way I won't have a room full of whites. And you can wear your counter racist shirt. That would be even better to come and wear the shirt and take the class. Would be fantastic. But I will be participating every week as host and victim of racism, reporting on my own experiences of workplace racism. Looking forward to it. For the rest of you all who would like to join in sharing your own narratives and code for how you operate, function in the work environment, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have any folks, if you have figured out what to do so that you don't have any problems, you can show up at work with a shirt on or no. Whatever the case is, you are not getting write-ups. You're not getting accused of being too quiet, not being a team player, not being a good fit. If you need sick time, personal leave, vacation time, it's warm, nice, warm weather now. None of that is a problem for you at all. If you're in that position, you should be one of the first to use that number to call in and tell us the details so that we can replicate your prosperity in the workplace. If you're having some difficulties, problems on the job, please call in and we can, you know, think about it, process, hopefully provide some counter-racist suggestions to maybe help employ logic to try to solve problems without creating new problems on the job. You can always drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you would like to write in a response, we can read your commentary on the air. If you have a question, that's fine too. Untiljustice@gmail.com. The segment that we heard at the beginning, I posted that on my Facebook page as well. Facebook.com/TheProblemIsWhitePeople. I posted that report on my Facebook page. That report was from New York Public Radio this week. So many things that I could say. The most important point, we've talked about this for a number of years. Anytime they have a segment that ostensibly they're talking about what they call discrimination, might even be racism, and they use the term women, and then they, whatever other add-ons they want to do, the little tacky phrases, women and POCs, women and minorities, whatever the little niggling phrases that they toss behind that, when they don't say white women, and then whatever little niggling phrases they want to put with it, that is a astronomical act of white supremacy, and that should be emphasized every time. How emphasized? You should raise your hand and say something every time that happens. If it's in a public forum, if it's in a class, anytime you're present and you can speak, you should say something. If it's online, you should write a comment. That's a fun thing to do. As many different ways as possible, write about it. You can do a YouTube video about it. Make it, if you're in school, you can make that a subject of inquiry. Pay attention, because you'll see that consistently. The way that they frequently phrase it, right, it'll be women and minorities. It suggests that all minorities are males, the way that they phrase it. Women and minorities. There's so many things incorrect about that. Even the segment, the final question that was asked during that interview, and most of the statistics were pertaining to New York, the final segment, they said, well, you know, white men make a lot more money than white women, 50% more, $60,000 to $40,000. Like, you know, what do we think is explaining that? And even when she's going to give her response, he asked white men, white women. She pivoted back in the response to, well, women in the workplace are penalized. Which women? White women, non-white females, because you already gave out statistics where they're not making the same at all. Which women are penalized in the workplace when they have children and their income goes down 4%? And which males? It certainly can't be black males who are making 50% less than white males. It certainly can't be that they are gaining income or getting 5% or whatever it was per child. That cannot be the case for black males. Massive. I mean, it just promotes confusion. And in my view, never is that to be assumed to be, oh, that's just a mistake, or I was speaking quickly. No, you were practicing white supremacy racism until proven otherwise. If anybody involved is classified as white, that's like massive, that's heavy, that cannot be confused. And the reason, getting to point two, my favorite concept in the history of the universe, good old black male privilege. Did you hear that they were talking about New York City? So Thomason, New York, Roz, who are the other male callers that we have from the New York area? Do you hear those fellas up there balling, making $3,000 more than black female? Look at all that New York black male privilege. I averaged it out. That's $250 per month. And you have people, serious scholars with PhDs, who talk seriously about white supremacy, racism, as though they might even be experts, and will say that black male privilege, black males make more than black females, $3,000. One of the worst, most trifling, pitiful concepts I've ever heard. If anything, just the fact that you can have a concept like that in a system of white supremacy with statistics like those, unless you think they're false, I don't. Just the fact that you can have a concept like that, in my view, shows the astronomical level of confusion. That's probably understating it. I don't know what would be a stronger word, exponential degree of confusion in the system of white supremacy. I still think that's understating it. But every time I hear those type of statistics, and I'm reminded of some of the guests we've had on this program, Dr. Tommy Curry, they point out anytime you hear those statistics that are talking about how much money black males allegedly make, all that good black male privilege, you should keep in mind the substantial number of black males that are in greater confinement. Many times those folks don't get counted, so those numbers are probably a little bloated. If they accurately reflected, and I mean in New York, they love the Khalif Browders, right? This is New York. If you accurately accounted for all of the black people that are in greater confinement, especially black males, because they love to cake them in there, those wage numbers would probably go down. So it might not even be $3,000, but we'll leave it at that. Black males in New York, $3,000 more than black females per year. Black male privilege balling. Anywho, if folks have commentary that they would like to share, the number to dial, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The Cows t-shirts did arrive this week. I got my new one. If you did not get yours yet, give it a day or so, but they should be rolling in. If you need a shirt, do not email Gus T. Renegade. Email Trav, cowsshirt at gmail.com. And I'll make sure I say this a few times during the broadcast. Tomorrow for Invisible Man, study session number 8, will be starting an hour earlier because aforementioned teacher training is in the evening. So I have to juggle my schedule, have busy Friday evenings, but we're just starting an hour earlier. So it'll be 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific for the book study tomorrow evening. Hope that doesn't mess up anyone's schedule. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, workplace racism, if you have either suggestions, problems, comments, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Draptomania.
Hey, how are you?
Quite poorly.
And callers, everybody's fine. And I understand me also. Congratulations on your yoga training. I hope everything goes well without any incidents of any racism on the job, racism for you to report in. So I have some workplace racism that I would like to report this week. Friday, I'm off work on Thursdays, Thursday night, and Friday and Saturday. So Friday, on my day off, I was attending a class, and during the day, it was about maybe about 9:30 in the morning. As I'm about to attend this class, I get a phone call, so I'm not aware of who the person was. So lo and behold, it was the master from the plantation calling me on my day off of work. So I'm wondering, why am I getting a call on my day off of work from the owner or the manager of the job? He's like the big higher up, like the owner of the business. And he's basically telling me about my quality for some, because I work for a call center. And he was saying, well, there were some issues. Well, he began the call saying to me that he doesn't usually have an opportunity to speak with me because of my hours, because I work nights. So he says, then he says that, well, the reason why I'm giving you a call is because you had some issues with some quality of one of your calls or something. And he was like, and I need you to fix that immediately. So I'm like, wow. So I said, you know, so I said to him, I said, well, what, you know, could you tell me what the issues are? He says, no, I can't tell you what the issues are. Are you coming in tonight? So I said, no, I'm not coming in tonight. I'm off tonight. So he said, well, when you come in, we'll have someone coach you on the calls. And, you know, I need you to fix it immediately. So I said, okay, and I didn't make a big deal out of it. I stayed calm or what have you. But I noticed, like, my body's, my physical reaction, I got to the call immediately. I noticed the stress starting to, you know, kick in, you know. My stomach started to turn. I automatically felt like you know, like the acid reflux, like kind of like, you know, in my stomach. And I had to end up taking like, you know, acid reflux or what have you to make my, you know, to calm down my stomach, because I had some stomach issues in the past where I had the H. pylori, which is the bacteria that causes ulcers. And, you know, being more aware of white supremacy, I see that a lot of that was due to stress, due to white supremacy, racism. So when I noticed that my stomach started feeling like that, I took an acid reflux or what have you. But I told myself, like, Lori, stay calm. I said to him, I went into my class and I did my class. But what I was saying to myself, I said, you know what? You know, this is my day off. I had plans to go out of town, and which I did. I said, well, I had to talk to myself, just give myself some positive self-talk. Lori, don't get excited, because, you know, in the past, what I would have done, I would have gotten excited. I would have stressed out the whole entire weekend on my day off. On my days off, now I don't go back. I wasn't going to go back into work, start work again until Sunday. So that means that from Friday to Friday, Saturday, and until the time I went into work, I would have had all that time stressing myself out and worrying about what the situation was going to be about, and then just being in fear about what was going to happen. But I just coaxed myself. I said, well, you know, I had made plans to go out of town, which I did, which was something different. I went out of town, and I didn't worry about it. You know, I just let it go. I said, well, you know what? I already know. First of all, I said, you know what? This could be just an act of white supremacy, because why are you calling me at home? Why are you not just addressing this issue when I get to work? Why was this such an important issue that you needed to call me at home? And this is like the second time that I've gotten texts or whatever on my days off or on my off time, and these people have been contacting me. So when I get back to work Sunday night, I get coached on the call, and it was just basically, it wasn't even that big of a deal. They made some said something about I was a little dismissive on a call, and the reason why I was dismissive, I was telling the guy that he couldn't speak to a supervisor at the time because my supervisor was dealing with another phone call at the time, and he was saying something about my tone. And basically, all the calls that I had done, it wasn't even that I failed the calls. I had ended up passing on the calls. So it wasn't like I got a failed call. I didn't fail the call. I passed the call, and I even passed the call that they had an issue with quality on with the 86. So I'm saying to myself, like, you know, you would think that maybe I was thinking that I was under the impression that maybe I was going to lose my job or something like that. And it didn't even end up being a big, a big deal like I thought it was, to warrant that they needed to give me a call at home. So I got the coaching. I did, I basically followed what they asked me to do as far as my tone and things like that. And and everything turned out to be okay. But I'm just saying, like, you know, it's just the stress, you know, that, you know, of just getting that type of phone call while you're off work, and then the worryation, and just being, you know, aware, basically, because of your program, thanks to the COWS, workplace racism, and particularly of just being aware of how these things affects me and how they end up practicing racism. I just, you know, I was just totally just like, I don't know. I was just very, very disturbed by that type of call that I got on my day off. And I just want to get you guys' input on what you guys think about that situation, about receiving phone calls on your day off and basically having you. Do you think that that was an act of white supremacy racism, that I got that call on my day off to have me worried and stressed out? Or I just want to get, you know, you guys input, and I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that, Draptomania. Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to say really quick, composure, critical composure. Just try to emphasize that, because I mean, we all have different codes. We all have a different view on white supremacy, counter-racism, you know, how we function in the workplace. We all have different jobs and the whole nine. Composure is consistent through all of that. If you don't keep your composure, meaning this race soldier calls you on your day off to make some sort of false allegation, and that's all day long, black people being accused, mm-hmm. Oh, you messed this up, and oh, you messed that up, and you ruined, you know, about 50, that's all day. Keeping your mm-hmm. composure, even in those circumstances, is critical. I mean, that should be the one component of counter racism that we all agree on, like composure.
Right, and thank God I did.
It's mm-hmm. not going to benefit, or I haven't seen it benefit any black person in a work situation or anywhere else, but especially a work situation, to flip out, get mad. What the hell are you calling me on my day off, Negro? I've never seen where that works out, or to get anything where you get upset and start responding. I mean, you can be stressed. It's designed to stress us. That's, I mean, the fun of practicing racism. I look forward to ruining Negra's day off. In fact, what is she even doing with the day off? Like, let's find a reason. That's what he said. Like, you should come in tonight. That's what this is about. Let's ruin every Negra's day. Let's find as many different ways. And let me put my imagination to work. That was from the news clip this past weekend. Red pointed that out. Let me put my imagination to work to find creative ways of stressing these Negroes out. That's exactly what it means to be classified as white. Understanding that has to go into, let me keep my composure. I know what it means to be white, and I know what this is about. This is about having me chimp out. I'm going to follow counter-racist logic. I'm going to manage my emotions and move through this logically. Mm-hmm. Very, very. In fact, again, that's the only part of counter-racism. There should be no disagreement. There should be total unanimous agreement. Absolutely. Workplace, composure, managing your emotions. The female caller, did you have suggestion or response?
Yes. This is Red in Nevada. My question is, because I know, like with a lot of jobs that I've worked at, they are kind of clear about not wanting to, they at least make it their, it, the they portray is that they want to make sure that no one is getting working outside of like getting paid or what have you, because they're like, oh, well, we can get charged for this. So it kind of seems like that was more along the lines of like a meeting. And at least in my experience, I've worked at call centers in the past. The only time that I would ever get calls, and I understand that racism in different places, they practice racism different ways, but I would only get calls as if maybe they needed someone to come in, but not to discuss like a coaching. So that would almost make it seem as if, you know, he's doing his like regular coaching outside of normal working hours. So I don't know if maybe your handbook talks about, not working outside of your scheduled hours or something like that. Because I know, like I said, companies, they act as if they can get in trouble for that. I definitely feel like it was an act of racism because, you know, just to stress you out. What I would suggest is that if there's a number, I don't know if you recognize your job number. I know that with my little sister, she had said at her job when they have to call people to ask them to come in, some people they actually have the employer's number just blocked or going straight to voicemail. I don't know if that's something that maybe you can do too. So if it's something as serious, which like you said, it wasn't that serious. So if it is something serious, make them leave you a voicemail, because if it's not serious, and that way you can kind of just cut off the conversation. If you hear that, oh, well, we need you to come in about, or you can just cut off you don't have to listen to the rest of the voicemail. I definitely understand where you're coming from, where they make things that we feel are not as serious into something that is a really big problem. And I'll mute my line. I'll wait to give my own commentary. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Red. Great point. And that's another one that's policy and procedure, because that's one that you can get. In fact, maybe that's one that should be added for training. What's the procedure in terms of if you have a day off being contacted? Is that, you know, company policy about, you know, employers asking you or calling you, making requests and what have you on your day off? Are you required to respond? Just get that protocol asked in advance, and great advice on, you know, blocking their number or not answering if you know it's them. Any other folks have suggestions on how they would deal with this? Pestered on your day off?
Yes, ma'am. I'm just make a comment.
Yes,
in regards to what Red said.
Yes, ma'am.
The funny thing is that, you know, I didn't know whose number it was, you know what I mean? And so when I got the call, I was just caught off guard. And, also, like I said, this guy is like the, owner of the company. So when I got this call from this guy that's basically almost like the top VP manager, you understand what I'm saying? You're getting a call from like someone that we're not talking about regular management. We're talking about like top level, almost owner of the company. And so you can imagine how, like, you know, my stress level, how it went. But I did stay very calm. My composure the whole time, it was very calm. It was so nonchalant. I was just, like, very nonchalant. And I'm just really grateful, you know, to the cows, because I didn't allow myself to get upset or act. You know, like you said, that's non-negotiable, because in the past I have not conducted myself, have always, you know, been very emotional about things like that. But I was very calm, unemotional, act like, you know, I wasn't disturbed at all. And, you know, I'm very happy that I did conduct myself in that manner. But it's like, how do you go and ask a person that is the owner of the company about policy and procedures and the part of the protocol if it's the owner of the company? And then the second thing is that the management says that they get calls from the company on their days off too. The manager that I told about that I was having issues with, the non-white manager, said she's gotten calls on her day off about some of like a quality call about me or others. Well, specifically me on her day off, on her time off. So I'm not I'm not really clear on how to handle that.
You could check the policy and procedure to see if they have anything in there in terms of if you are not on company, not just a day off, but once you are not, you know, on the clock. They, as Red said, a lot of places, they have strict codes about people working when they are not actually on company time, and then verifying that with a supervisor or someone else, mm-hmm. just to see if they have some sort of policy about that. That's one step that you could take. Mm-hmm. Other folks have suggestions on, I guess, not just a supervisor or a manager, but, you know, a pretty high up executive calling to pester you, practice white supremacy on your day off, how you would deal with that situation moving forward.
Can I be heard?
Yes, Mr. Steele.
Hello?
You there? We can hear you. Hello? You there, Mr. Steele?
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, this is Ken Steele. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. And just a real quick question. What do you do that have your manager calling you on your day off, or that you would get a call on your day off?
Well, I work for a call center, and they have a client. They have clients, so they do quality assurance, and they listen in on our phone calls. And, it was just a basic quality, a quality call. Basically saying that, do something correctly on a call. And then when I got graded on the call, I still passed the call. It wasn't like, for quality, you can, fail a call. But I didn't even fail the call. I ended up still passing the call with the 86. So I passed the call. So, I was thinking, I would have thought that I would have got an F on the call or something. No, that wasn't even the case. I still passed the call with an 86.
Yeah, that sounds like harassment. Like, that sounds way out of line. I would definitely encourage you to document this situation and any other time that they call you about anything out of company time. Call centers in particular are very, very strict about how much time that you are on the phone, that you are being utilized for the job. They keep very strict records, and these records serve as basically legal documents. That's when you clock in and when you clock out. I know that I don't know any call center job that the people working at the call center have to take their work home with them. That is above and beyond what I would expect from a typical call center environment. If a work situation is so toxic that it's causing you stress on the days that you shouldn't be there or that you aren't scheduled to be there, you might want to seriously consider changing the environment that you're in or changing the industry that you're taking part in. I know that call center work is very stressful. It's kind of it's the ground floor of inside sales or B2C or B2B sales, whatever you want to call it. And dealing with customer assurance, that's, on the, customer retention side and everything. There's less stressful levels of sales and quality and customer care or client relations. You might want to look into getting into the next levels of of these areas if you do like, you know, working in call center type environments, because, you know, that seems to be kind of what I would expect in a call center where a lot of the people who are working there are non-white and the managers are white. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of environment that I would expect the treatment that you're receiving to take place in, because that is 100% out of line for them to call you and start to browbeat you on the phone during your day off. You're not even on the clock. Yeah, that's outrageous, and that's only something that happens in call centers where it's a lot of non-white people and that are doing the grunt work, and the white people who are serving as the overseers. So get out of that environment, try to find something better, and in the meantime, just document every single time something like that happens. But yeah, those environments will literally kill you. They'll stress you to death. And also, in your work experience, one thing that may... one thought that may help you along the way, and it's helped me along the way, is that I want to get paid more money to do less work. If my job gets to be more important and I have to do less stuff to fulfill the obligations of my job, I feel like I'm on the right trajectory. If you find yourself on the trajectory where you're doing as much work and you're being paid less, or you're doing more work and you're getting paid less, you're hustling backwards, and you probably should look for a different way of getting your job accomplished. And that perspective might help you steer away from these type of environments. I'll go ahead and mute my line at this time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mr. Steele. Any other folks who dialed in with a hand up have suggestions for Draftomania, her situation of being harassed on her day off?
Have you heard?
Heard both of you. Is that a software developer in Wisconsin?
Yes, sir.
Proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers and listeners. I would just be mindful about it being harassment. Always keep that in your mind. Sometimes these calls can be sort of precursors to more insidious behavior. I've worked in a position where you can get a call after hours, and it wouldn't be out of the ordinary, but my boss or my old manager had my phone number, and every once in a while he would call my phone and just breathe on the phone. So I would definitely be mindful of that. Pay attention to this person. This could be a precursor for some more incorrect behavior beyond just your work performance. In addition, I would just be mindful of, you know, again, I think we've talked about this before, but just be mindful of minimizing conflict with your non-white supervisor. It seems like they're engaging her in some behavior that may be detrimental to you based on the things that you've said over the past few weeks. So I would just be very mindful of that. That's all I have. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Retired firefighter, thank you for your patience, sir. Did you want to proceed?
Greetings, everyone. I was just going to ask, is it your job to the caller, is it your job's policy that you would get a phone call? You can get phone calls from your employer to your home phone while you're off duty?
That's one of the things I'm really not sure about, because the management seems to get phone calls about my calls that I, when I'm, the management, the non-white manager says she's gotten calls on her day off about a call that I had, that they had questions about quality. I have gotten, a text about an employer that was working there that they had ended up firing, and they wanted me to basically snitch on the black worker, and I had ended up getting texts from while I was off work about this individual, and they wanted me to do some type of deposition to tell them about what I was supposedly had knew about this guy, and I told them I wouldn't do it because I didn't have any information on them. So this is like the second time I've gotten a call. So it seems like, based on what I'm hearing, is that they do it. They have been doing it to the management, but in regards to the other workers like me, I don't know if they do it to them or not. You know what I mean? So I'm not even really sure. But I find it strange that this guy is like the owner of the company, you know, and he's like calling me on my day off. So I just found that to be very, very strange.
Yeah. Well, I of course, I don't know what the policy is anyway, myself, but I would if I would see anybody's any number and I don't recognize, I probably wouldn't answer the phone.
Okay.
And let your phone take a message, and then from there you could choose on whether or not you want to collect that message, because I kind of like really felt the pain that you went through when you answered that phone. You know, as far I can see that happening to a lot of people, because it does give you the idea that you're in some sort of serious trouble on a job. And what I think that what you're saying, that you would have felt a little better if they just waited for you to come back to work,
right?
You know, as far as they're concerned. And because during my time being employed, I made a habit of not entertaining people on the job, and this was even before the technology where you can get messages and whatnot, that sort of thing. Just didn't like the idea of entertaining people when I was off duty. Mm-hmm. You know, for that concern, for the same reasons why you mentioned the potential trauma that you was going through. You know, just by hearing what that person was telling you, that it has to be something done immediately, that sort of thing. But yeah. Other than that, I had a similar circumstance, situation, but I don't know if I need to say it right now. Maybe I'll just wait until the next time around. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Did we get any other suggestions? Folks wanted to share with Draftomania and her situation, the harassment on her day off.
May I say one more thing?
Red in Nevada?
Briefly. Thank you. The other thing that I noticed, at least with call center jobs that I have been employed at, they're not necessarily going to give you a heads up if they're going to fire you. So that maybe might take away some of the anxiety that you may feel when they give you a call. Because I've seen it where even recently, they'll let you come in, let you work a half a day, and then fire you around noon, around your scheduled lunch break. So the thing about it is that I definitely feel like basically like everyone else is saying that they just did it just to, and you know, just to get on, just to make you feel bad on your day off. And then also, I'm not sure if you're doing this, and please, BGQ, forgive me if I'm wrong, but definitely don't try to, you definitely want to separate yourself from the responsibilities that your manager has, because they're getting paid more money, kind of like what Mr. Steele was alluding to. It's like if they're getting calls on their day off, they also may have that ability, as far as maybe the company gave them a company device. Even if they didn't, they may have signed up for something different and also are getting more money. So just comparing what you have to deal with, what your supervisor has to deal with, I make sure to explicitly not do that. So if the supervisor is complaining about something, I just think in the back of my head, well, that's what you signed up for. I think that's the last thing I wanted to mention. Thank you for allowing me to share again.
Great point. Any other suggestions for Traptomania? Grand. Other folks, if you have your own situation that you wanted to discuss, certainly if we have any suggestions, if you have codified some things that work well, that is always appreciated. But other folks, proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Red Nevada.
Write poorly as well, but I hope everybody else is doing good. I've been taking the past couple of days off or sparingly, because I haven't been feeling well, but I kind of noticed, like, even within my policy, that it's, at least to me, it's kind of odd that they allow you so many sick days, but then if you take a sick day, you are, it is counted against you, and the amount of sick days they've given or allowed outweighs the number that, that can be counted against you, meaning that if they allow 10 sick days, if you use 8 of those sick days, you're basically fired. So I thought that was unusual. I don't know if anyone else has maybe looked at that or experienced that, what have you. The other thing that I'm trying to, that I feel that I have gotten better with is really, if I do overhear side conversations, especially between a victim and a suspected racist, to not get involved and really just to not even have a facial expression as if I'm disgusted with the conversation. I've heard talks of politics and just think and just all different types of things. Even like I've heard a non-white person tell a suspected racist kind of talking about another suspected racist supervisor and how they were kind of upset with the approach that suspected racist supervisor took or was responding to this victim. So just and just kind of thinking back to where, so not that I'm putting myself on some type of making myself seem as if I'm more intelligent or whatever, make myself think that I'm better than this other victim who is talking to these racists, because I know that that's the same thing that I used to do. But that's one thing that I've just definitely been trying to practice. And then also with the victim, because I really try to ignore the conversation because I hear it a lot between the victim and this suspected racist, which I kind of feel like, I don't know if this person may think that they are friends or something like that, but what I've noticed is that when this victim is having issues with doing their job, the suspected racist, they don't offer any help or anything like that. It got to the point one day to where it's like I could overhear the victim struggling a lot because they were, you know, they're kind of verbose at times. And I finally got to the point where it's like, okay, I'll just go ahead and help them. I'll just offer my help just so I wouldn't, you know, not only because it's a victim, but it's like, so that way they don't like really make themselves really that noticeable to these races that are around them. But I guess the thing I guess is I'm kind of having issues with, because I'm really trying to balance the fact of me not giving too much help to victims who sit around me, and then also having to help suspected racists who sit around me as well, if they do, you know, ask me for help, or if I also hear them struggling. Usually when I do, I just ignore it. But just to make sure that other white people don't catch on, because of course they're always listening. And I do kind of sense that white people are treating me different, because I've really kind of dialed back, you know, speaking to everyone. And even, you know, not even looking their way. Before, they would, you know, walk past them, they would say good morning, even if they were having conversations between each other. And then, you know, that, you know, they would say good morning, whatever. Now I notice that they almost pretend as if I'm not around, which I'm kind of glad about. But then also you never know what these races are, you know, thinking or maybe planning or what have you. The last thing I was trying to tell a victim that it's kind of like everyone knows that I've been speaking to the victim. So it wouldn't be as odd for me to help that victim out. But just trying to really coach them on not using certain words. The victim kept talking about, well, you know, women act this way and women do this, and kept trying to tell the victim, like, maybe you should not use those terms. You don't know who's listening, who, you know, how they would take that. But, you know, the victim didn't care. So I don't know if maybe I took the wrong response with that, because I tried to tell them that, you know, they're any type of, you know, harassment or whatever can be brought up. And since you're saying this around a bunch of, quote unquote, women or people who think women and people who think that they're women, that might be a problem in the future. And I'll mute my line. Thank you for allowing me to share.
I think we had that before. I think Thomas in New York had a coworker who, I don't know if they were saying things like, you know, women act this way or what have you, but it was making inappropriate comments in the workplace, verbiage not fitting a professional environment, and he tried to intercede. I don't know if it was super effective long range, but you know, you just try to do the best you can to help out if it's another victim, and you know, you think this might help them adjust their code so they're not maybe getting as much attention from race soldiers. Maybe they can avoid a problem or two. Great. If they're not receptive, you know, you can reflect and refine. Maybe if I had said it this way or done it this way, that can be helpful sometimes. And sometimes it's just not anything you can do. That's just the system of white supremacy at work. The seating arrangement, that's definitely challenging, because I take the opinion whites would notice that sort of thing if they see, like, oh, she's helping out the darkies in her area, but she's not helping out any of us. You know, we have an issue, and all of a sudden she's deaf. She doesn't move at all. You know, they definitely would pick up on that. So that, you know, is a chore to see if you can do that kind of discreetly to not be real, real flagrant about it as you go through, because they are definitely watching. And that might even be a symptom of their survey or evidence. I'll say it that way. That may even be evidence of their surveillance if they, you know, are giving you the cold shoulder and not speaking, you know, that they have noticed something to kind of raise their ire about you and your conduct in the office. Maybe not. Just, it's been my experience. Race soldiers are very discerning about their niggers. Let's see. And kudos for helping out other black people. I still, high commendations, high black self-respect for trying to help out other victims in the workplace in a variety of ways. Helping the, I guess, verbose victim, and then trying to help out the other non-white person and maybe getting her to be more mindful about what she's saying. That's right on. Excellent, excellent work, and black self-respect on display. Do we have other folks, if you had either suggestions, commentary on what we have discussed thus far, or if you have your own thoughts, experiences, feel free. Other folks with a hand up are sitting and thinking.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter.
I would second the motion with Ms. Red in Nevada on her attempts to assist another non-white victim. If I would get any resistance, then that would conclude my efforts with that non-white person. You know, so I agree with what she does in that light, for sure. Because it may be a situation where it may be something that I may need help with, you know, on a job. But sometimes you would encounter a non-white person or a non-white black person or non-white person that's not black, and they would not be receptive to your efforts. When I see that, I would just, I would not no longer make any attempts with that person. That's it.
Context of white supremacy, neutralizing workplace racism. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer in Wisconsin. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening again. So I just had an update on our on this merger that I've been discussing for the past few weeks. So we had a meeting last Friday. The CEO gave us a meeting. It was really interesting because there was also a company picnic on the same day. He scheduled the meeting right before the company picnic and then discussed cost cutting and how he wasn't trying to get rid of jobs or get rid of personnel, but he wasn't sure what would happen in the future. So I thought that was really interesting that he did that right before the picnic, so everybody can have their little last hurrah and then go on about their business of possibly getting laid off. The same Friday, I went over to the architect that I'm working with normally. I had a question, and he told me that I was supposed to drop the project that I was working on immediately and that I would be starting a new high-priority project. This, of course, has caused some conflict again between me and the non-white Indian male. Although the non-white Indian male seems to be dealing with it very well, he seems to be a bit upset that he wasn't chosen for this project. I see it, of course, as them trying to get as much work out of me as possible before they let me go. So I'm still looking for a job. I've also had the head of security watching me very closely. I guess this is related to the incident that I spoke about with the gentleman saying that I had all these side projects. I guess if I had to make a guess, I would think that they were thinking that I was selling company secrets. I don't know, whatever they think is going on, but I'm not doing anything incorrect, and I expect them to be surveilling me, so I don't really have an issue with that. On a brighter note, the new guy who was added to our team a couple of weeks ago, I have not been asked to train, so that's a very good thing. They've got the white males, and then the non-white Indian male is also turning back and avoid that situation. And now that I'm pulled away on this project, I'm pretty much just sort of on my own with the architecture team, and I really don't have to deal with the team at all, which is also causing some issue with the manager that I have, who keeps prying into, I guess he keeps trying to insert himself into the project. I just let the architect deal with that, but the architects seem to be getting more and more irritated with that. So we'll see what happens there. That's all I have right now. And thanks for letting me share. I will mute my line again. Thanks.
Much obliged, codified software developer in Wisconsin. under surveillance. I feel like we've discussed that quite a bit this summer. Absolutely. And absolutely, I don't know if we've discussed it this summer, but extracting as much labor from the Negras as possible, that is a long time tradition on the plantation. It even reminds me of kind of a, I guess, a more refined technique of what Red was talking about. Like at the call center, they would call you in and squeeze a half day of work out in the middle. All right, get out of here before you even get your lunch. It's standard operating procedure. But just, again, being mindful, being composed, and being very aware about the surveillance and all the tactics. This is the same environment where you concluded that the folks were probably trying to set you up with the false job offering from a few weeks ago. If folks had any comments on what we have heard thus far, grand. If you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, lines should be open. Proceed.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I used to call from a different number, but my phone doesn't work. I'm calling from my cell phone. I called a while ago. I talked about the transgender person saying something to me. That was a while ago. I don't work at the school anymore. However, if I knew this before I left the school, I would have done something. Because I worked at a school, I was covered under Title IX. Title IX, I think a lot of people might have heard of it, and you usually think about that. Women can't play sports and things like that because it applies to usually educational facilities. And as a professor, I worked at an educational facility, and I was told because I went to another seminar, and we brought up, most of the participants were Black and Hispanic, and we brought up about how students, particularly white students, because most of us worked at white institutions, would say crazy things to us that we believe were out of order. And one of the participants was also a Title IX coordinator at another school, and she brought that up, that anything like that would be covered under Title IX. So if you think some person, and it could be male, male, female, female, male, female, or all these other categories that they will all come up, have now come up, cisgender versus whatever, I don't know, a lot of categories. I believe they are all covered at an educational institution under Title IX. So that's a new law for us, Title IX.
Interesting. Is it from, I guess, from what you've seen, is it any way that non-white people can use that in some sort of manner, this Title IX and how that's going to be done? Is it any way that non-white people can use that effectively?
Well, it just says no person, I'm going to read you the law because it's very short.
Mm-hmm.
No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So, you know, like I said, it's just based on sex, but a law is a law. If someone comes to you and you think, oh, they discriminate you as a Black man and this person is a white woman, call it Title IX and let them follow the steps.
Hmm.
And at every school, there's a Title IX coordinator. You give it to the Title IX coordinator, and they do all the investigating because that's their job, to investigate any and every claim.
Now that's interesting. I would be curious to see if someone was codified right in that sort of situation, and that, because I mean, hey, we're talking the school situation. It's a lot of Black males with white female teachers. That's the way they're supposed to say it every time. Not women teacher, white female, white women teachers. That could work if you're seeing a pattern of these females mistreating these male students. Miss Andre, I think, is the fancy word they might hang on that. That would be very interesting. Anybody sees any cases that come up?
I'm sorry. I know there was one of the callers that called directly. There were teacher assistant to deal with other students. So that would be a Title IX issue as well, even though you're not the teacher, you know. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, like I said, these white students, they might say crazy things to you. And usually, you just say, You know, and if you know, because these feelings are very open. If you believe, you just use one of those millions of times that they made up now. This cisgender maybe said something to me because I don't know. Now all those times that come up, now they have a lot of things that I believe are going to be included under that type of mind, just, not just male, female. Like I said, the pansexual. I don't know, it's a million, every time you turn around, it's a new name.
Mm.
If you work at a school, it's a higher education. And it says receive federal assistance. Almost every student, almost every school has one student that receives a Pell Grant. So, there you go.
That is a great suggestion. I know we have listeners who, folks that work in education or what have you, pass that one along and see if, you know, there's a way it can be implemented that is constructive for non-white people to use. I mean, I think it's about 70% of the female teachers in the U.S. are white women. So that right there. Much obliged for calling in with the information, suggestions, really. Other folks who dialed in, if you have either your own situation that you want to discuss or if you have comments on what has been shared thus far, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Mr. Steele?
Yes. I'm currently in Long Beach, California, at the moment. And I wanted to share a story about one of my my good associates, a fellow victim of racism, that is starting his own law firm. This associate of mine has been a business partner of mine in the past, and he recently started and set up on his own to have his own law firm. And this was after a few years of being a lawyer and having a few different jobs and seeing that the environment that in one of these law firms was just not for him. And he was kind of bouncing ideas off of my head. And I finally told him, look, you're going to have to update your LinkedIn to reflect the skills that you have acquired and to reflect the responsibilities that you want to undertake in this next role that you have, either as a consultant or at another firm in a different capacity. So he updated his LinkedIn, and he changed a few things around a few words, and suddenly people started contacting him for the type of work that he outlined that he was able to do in his LinkedIn. Fast forward a couple of months, and he calls me, and it was the middle of the night, and I'm thinking, man, this is, you know, pretty late because I'm on the West Coast, he's in Central Time. You know, it's got to be really late over there. And he was just, you know, talking to me about, man, I have this deadline due. I'm, you know, I've been hired for these projects, and it's great, steady money, but it's hard. He was telling me all of his responsibilities. And I said to him, hey, why don't you hire an assistant? You know, they're paying you X amount of dollars. Why don't you take X amount of Y amount of dollars from the X and put it towards an assistant? Because one thing that kind of that I mentioned earlier, but I think needs to be impressed upon more, is that my philosophy towards working at these jobs is that I want to get paid more to do less. You can have more responsibilities, but what you actually have to do yourself physically to fulfill those responsibilities should be less and less and less as you go down the line. There's no reason why somebody who is trained in to the level a lawyer would be, needs to be pulling all-nighters like they're still in college. And if you are in your career and you find yourself, you're pulling all-nighters and, you know, you're really stressed out and you're super worried about tomorrow and everything, perhaps you need to hire some help. Perhaps you need to find what they call a virtual assistant, where you can go ahead and pay somebody in a different country to take some of the work that you have to do, and that you can go ahead and pass it along to them. As long as you can proceduralize something, you can teach somebody else how to do it. And oftentimes we can save ourselves a lot of hassle and a lot of heartache by hiring some help. And my associate, he recently hired some help, and he's been able to get more done. He's been able to devote more time to finding more contracts, and he's on the path to hiring even more people. So I'm not saying that this is going to be the solution to ending the system of white supremacy or anything like that, but perhaps our approach to what we call work and our approach to the time that we have available to get some of these jobs done needs to change, so that we can free ourselves enough time that we can focus on having larger ambitions, like replacing the system of racism with a system of justice, instead of being worried about what Jim Bob has to say about our performance review on our days off. I'll go ahead and mute my line. Hello?
Mr. Steele?
I can hear you, Mr. Steele.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm done.
Thank you for the commentary. Excellent suggestion about the... I think you've given that one a few times about if you need, I guess, assistance or have a heavy workload, the virtual assistance might be of some benefit for folks out there. I've heard that one a number of times from Mr. Steele. If anyone has employed that one successfully, I reckon that would be grand to get feedback. If other folks, if you have suggestions on what we've heard thus far, or if you have your own situation you would like to discuss, share, or get counter-racist suggestions on, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Stacy in the UK.
Hello to you and the callers. Shall I give my time stamp, Gus?
Absolutely. The time was about to tick, so I waited.
Okay. I'm going to let you do it then. Keep up with the ceremony.
It will, let's see, 2:30 a.m. Friday morning. Summer solstice over there.
It is. It's actually been very nice weather for the last couple of weeks, actually, as well. So, but yeah, hello to you and the callers. I mean, the first thing I wanted to say is I just think I'd like to thank you and the rest of the callers, actually, because, I mean, the information on the CAS is always really informative, but I found last week's discussion around the use of tech in the workplace and just understanding how we are monitored and, I guess, the ways to avoid being penalised because we don't know we're being monitored, and the way IT is tracked. I just found that whole discussion really useful, and I just wanted to recognise actually just the level of knowledge and experience that is, you know, evident in terms of the people who are calling into the CAS and their backgrounds, and I hope that isn't taken in in a sort of condescending way, but actually I think regardless of people's job titles and experience in the workplace, actually it's just, actually sometimes for me it's very obvious that the system of racism is clearly holding people back, because the jobs that people have, and I don't think it's a reflection of your intelligence or anything else, but it's certainly not demonstrated in the level of intelligence that black people have. And it comes across so often in the level of discussion on this call that actually, you know, if but for the system of racism, people would be living very different lives and utilising our level of intelligence in many different ways. And I guess that is also something to be heeded in terms of our own actions for trying to end the system of racism and white supremacy. And I hope people understand what I mean by that. And then, and it's taken in the sincerity that is given. Gus, I just wanted to run through a couple of updates, actually, or experiences that I've had. And it's just following on from the conversation and the global broadcast that was on Sunday and the discussion around Grenfell. And it reminded me, the issue around why the cladding was put up on the buildings in the first place. And it reminded me of a job that I had many, 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 many years ago. I used to work with voluntary and community organisations and helping them to access funding for projects was one part of my job. And I remember somebody came in and he had presented himself. It was a white male. And he presented himself as somebody who was very interested in the environment and making the local area look a lot better and improving, you know, the sort of day-to-day living of people in his local area. And he was looking for funding for a project to put up trees in the area. And so obviously I'm doing my job, I'm helping him out. And after he'd gone, there was a white female who worked with me, and she pulled me aside and she said, "Oh, I know him," and I can't remember because I'm going back a long time, so I couldn't remember exactly what the association was, but I think maybe like somebody who knew him or had lodged with him was a friend of hers, and they knew all about him and his band of friends who lived in that area. And essentially, this so-called environmental project that he was presenting to me was actually, they wanted to block out the local estate because it was spoiling their view. And so essentially he came to me under the guise of a voluntary organisation or community organisation wanting to do good in this area, but all it was that he just didn't want to see all of those poor people, probably lots of non-white people, in his eyesight. And so he came asking for help to get funding with this very racist, or, you know, well, very racist in my opinion, agenda. Now, she didn't present it to me as a race issue. It was more, I guess, a class issue in terms of the way that she was presenting it. But yeah, I was actually stunned, because at that point, I mean, I was a lot younger. I hadn't heard of anything like that. And my mind just does not work like that. But these are the lengths and that will be undertaken, and also to utilise the resources out there to help people with genuine causes. It's unscrupulous, but it's, you know, the type of mentality that leads to a disaster like Grenfell. And the other thing I wanted to comment on was I think it was Reddy Nevada who was talking about again, it goes back to the observation and just trying to avoid being accused of helping non-white people and not helping white people. Again, it reminded me, I have to say, every time I hear people talking on the cows and giving their updates, you've often said that for every job that you've probably had, you would have experienced racism. I hear people giving updates sometimes and almost feel like a slight Walter Mitty character, because It just reminds me of another racist experience that I've had in my life. And I've been working for a long time. So there are many, many experiences that you just have and you kind of put in the back of your mind. But it reminded me of something that happened in my past where my manager, a white female, who at the time had a non-white, or probably still has, non-white partner who was also working in the organisation. When I first joined the team, I had a black female who was supporting me on a project, and she was also supporting another manager who was the same as me. And the other manager was a white female, and she was quite new to the organisation, but nonetheless, she was a manager the same grade as me. And I remember our head of team, the white female with the non-white partner, was saying to me about this non-white female. I think she'd got mad with her about something, and she told me not to help her carry out a particular task, which I was stunned by, because I thought, well, we're all part of a team. We're all supposed to be team players. She's supporting me on this project. Why would I not help her to ensure that she delivered the task effectively? And why, as my head of team, would you be coming to me to tell me not to help her? Because basically she was saying she should be able to do this. She shouldn't need any guidance, whatever. And I just thought, that is not the way that any manager should be managing a team. But I didn't say anything. I just thought, okay, this is all the more reason why I will be helping her. And I did actually tell her what was going on, because we were, we were quite close at the time. So I told her, but, you know, obviously I made sure that she did what she needed to do and deliver it well. Anyway, come maybe about a year, 18 months later, I was also not in this manager's good books. So an appraisal, she's raising all kinds of issues with me. And one of the comments she made was that she notices how much I support this non-white female who's junior to me, who was supposed to be supporting me on the project, but I don't help this white female manager. Now, the white female manager was at the same grade as me. We worked on different projects. Why would I be helping her? And bear in mind, this white female had never come to me. The other manager who was the same grade as me had never come to me and asked me for any help or claimed that she was having any problems. So it wasn't as if like I'd refused her help or anything like that. It just wasn't even an issue as far as I knew up until that point. But either way, I looked at my head of team and said, and the woman's name was Catherine. I said, I give Catherine exactly the same amount as help as Catherine gives me. And that was the end of that conversation, because she didn't have anywhere to go with that. Why am I helping her any more than she's helping me? And as this woman hasn't offered any help to me and is not concerned about my performance, why should I be overly concerned about hers? I think she got the message and she left it alone. Gus, I've been conscious that I've been speaking for a while. I've got some other things. If there's time, I'll update. But I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Much obliged, Stacey in the UK, context of white supremacy. That helping black people does stick out, really, in any context, but especially in the workplace. Like, I think we've had people who spoke before about they got in trouble just because they were helpful to black people on their job. That ended up, some race soldiers really did not like that. And I can only emphasize, man, whites really pay attention to that. When it looks like, oh, wow, she's trying to help other black people do well on the job. She's not, you know, running around trying to call them names and sabotage them and talk bad about them and snitching on them to get them into, oh, my God, we hate that. What can we do to mess that up? We don't like that. We need black people anti-blackness. We need them calling names. We need them fighting each other and just despising other black people. That's what we need to maintain this system. So yeah, that sticks out. That is not a surprise at all. And I think anybody, if you understand racism, white supremacy at any level, that is a major one. Keeping non-white people in conflict with each other, and anytime you're working, I mean, in any way, just I'm not going to engage in talking bad, spreading rumors about another non-white person. Even after being told, don't help out, you know, this black female, don't help her complete the project, and you still figure out a way to get her constructive information, and they come in, whammo, you're helping out all these other black people, and you're not helping out the white people on the job. Be very mindful of that at all times. Incidentally, I think it might have been, it was a very recent conversation. I feel like we were just talking about this, or I was just talking about this with a Cows listener, but the first situation that you referenced, Stacey, the race soldier coming in and wanting to get trees to probably to block out non-white people from the sight line, that is worldwide black people doing things to make sure that they can block, obfuscate any niggers that might be, you know, around their property or residence, whatever it happens to be. That is worldwide, whether it's putting up a forest, train tracks, subway, anything. Got to be some type of dividing line so we can't see the niggers until we want to come over and, you know, do some slumming, as they say. Another cowbell. Other folks, dial in if you have commentary on what has already been discussed, or if you have your own situation. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks we've not heard at all, people we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida. We can hear you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I was thinking of a couple of incidents that I haven't shared, or incidents, or observations. The first is, I had to go and purchase some stamps from the post office because I pretty much frequent there on my everyday routine. And the same skillful white woman, race soldier, very powerful. And I know, like, that segment was played about, I guess, white women being grouped in with non-white females as being disadvantaged. That is not the case, at least not on the premises, not at my workplace. She wanted me to get to purchase a roll of 100. Okay, so the context is the tax deed lady, white woman, when she was here, she retired. The cost, I believe, was $47.50, $49.50. I'm going to go with that. And they used to give me the exact cash and change to go and purchase it and bring it back. So this was about like maybe 3 weeks ago. And the black female that was in there and the office at the time, she says, well, you know, I think the stamps have gone up. I think they're 49 cents. So I guess somehow that totaled it to be $50. Well, she said, now, keep in mind, this is the same one that tried to, I guess, publicly humiliate me in a group setting. She said, well, I'm going to give you 50, all right? I'm going to give you $50. Now, I thought about that because she said it so fast, but the way, you know, the dialect or the vernacular, like, she addressed that to me because I'm a black person, but she didn't say 50. All right. And that was a real slick one right there. So pretty much I got the stamps or whatever. I brought them back. The second one is I shared an incident like this a few weeks ago with, I know this is again in the Area 8, but there was a couple that came in, and one, and there's a disadvantaged black male, like He needed sign language interpretation. But it was a blind black male that came in with like one of those canes. And here again, it's the white woman doing all of the explaining, like all of the elaborating. And, you know, she leading them, I guess, to go get the mayor's license. And I'm wondering, like, how is this, I don't know, like, how is this occurring? Like, this guy's like, he's pretty much blind, okay? And she's doing all of the talking, all of the explaining of the questions and stuff. He's barely saying anything. So when they're leaving the office, you know, they're saying, well, hopefully this will work out. And then he says, well, if it doesn't work out, I can go and live with my mama. I can go live with my mama. Then, you know, everybody starts laughing and cackling and whatnot. Number three is we had the Bring Your Children to Work Day. It was just yesterday. And I think it was a lot of racism practiced because, number one, we have a majority white working staff. And what's interesting is that mostly it was black children that came. So it's like, I think white people, I guess I could say, silently rebelled against bringing their white children. Maybe because I think some kind of controversy was going on with racism, or they might term it as discrimination. But two things that I noticed was that it was a portion of the day where the children were being showed, you know, a tour of the courthouse. And the white child only had their guardian with them, but the other children didn't. So I thought that was very interesting. Like, it was three black children and one child that has a white parent and a white child. And the white child had the parent with her, the girl she works in my department. So I'm like, where are the other guardians at? That was number one for that. And the second is that I found it extremely racist that they had the children go up to the juvenile court hearing docket. And that's usually held on Wednesdays. See, so I think that was strategic. I think the race soldier woman, I think, orchestrated that to happen on a Wednesday so that the black children primarily would go to this juvenile court docket and sit in and, I guess, listen to it for however long it was. And I can't think of my next one, but I guess I'll just stop right there. And thanks for allowing me to share.
And you're thinking it was deliberate, the allowing the children to go into the juvenile court session, I guess I'm assuming black males being paraded in the court to just have that be showcased, black criminality. You can see your little niggers being arrested or whatever they got in trouble for.
Yes, sir, because I was, like, the way that I visualized it, like, I usually take the stairs. And, like, I'm going into the different judges' chambers, and it's on that third floor. And I see two of the three children come out of the courtroom, and I didn't even see who was. It almost looked like no one was even chaperoning them, almost. Like, I couldn't even see what adult was with them, at least from the angle that I got. But I could tell that two to three of them were coming out of the courtroom, and I know on Wednesday they have the juvenile court hearing, so most of the other juveniles were in the courtroom, and the parents were waiting outside, I guess, for their case to be called up. So I'm like, what is going on here with this? And you know, the white woman, the race soldier white woman, was giving them a detour later on that day and bought them Pizza Hut, but I think they're going to exploit this just like they've been doing a lot. They're going to put this in the newsletter. I'm going to say, see, you know, hey, you know, we're gonna use this. We're gonna take these pictures, get the Canon one out, like the good camera, and take some pictures and put them in the newsletter. And I can predict it's gonna come out maybe like the end of next week. They're gonna have like a lot of photography on there showing that they have black children coming to tour the courthouse, because my mom said that it was majority black children at her building too, but the majority of the staff is white.
Interesting. Wow. That newsletter, web, I don't know if anybody else has a newsletter on your job, but wow, you have at least heard one instance, or I can't even say one, multiple instances of the newsletter being weaponized to support white terrorism. So if you do have a newsletter on your job, I guess maybe that's something you should be mindful of, maybe peruse to see what's in there. But certainly you should perk up anytime it's, hey, let's get a picture so we can put you in the newsletter. Really perk up and be attentive. Maybe even see if you can get out of it based on what we've heard in this one. But yeah, something just seems real incorrect about that. Regardless, if these are juveniles, if this is the juvenile court session, and a lot of times they seal juvenile records. I mean, these are not adults that we want to take out and shame. And I guess unless they're, you know, black children, but something just seems incorrect about that all the way around. That's not, you know, entertainment. Why is that come to where out of all the things, and we could go look at these forms and see if we can figure out what is a white/black race and then black/white. That would be way more interesting than seeing black people locked up, because you see that every day. The 50, make sure I do not forget, that is standard. We have heard that so many times over the years on the broadcast, where you'll have some trifling white person, especially in the workplace, although that, you know, this one happens to be out beyond just the area of labor. But a white person talking to a black person, and sometimes it's not even like we're cool, we're not friends, we don't hang out or anything like that, and just, oh yes, this is my Negro friend, I'll break out my Negro slang, and 50 or the do-rag, we have had so many people talk about this, even simple greetings. It can't just be, you know, morning, afternoon, Pam, it's got to be, you. What up, dog? How's it? All this nonsense every single time. I would just look at them. You don't even have to say, that's one where you can eliminate the and just do silence and then proceed with the rest of your day. I think that might stop that the last time. But, and the context on this one, for this to be the same tacky white woman who, she didn't read the newsletter, apparently she forgot your name and all that, forgot to introduce the black female from before, to have the same person with the continued behavior. Just make it clear what it means to be white, and particularly white woman running things at the courthouse. It's not master on the plantation, ma'am on the plantation. Other folks, much obliged, call in Florida. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, if you have either comments or suggestions on what's been shared, the first portion, or you have your own comments or own situation rather that you would like to discuss, feel free. Line should be open.
Hi, Gus. Could I add a tip and maybe some additional information about what I've experienced? It's B from Toronto, Canada.
We already knew. Good to hear from you.
Hi. Hello to callers and listeners as well. So yes, first, the tip that I wanted to add was there's a book that I've been reading, and I sure hope that it could be part of your book club, or at least if it's possible, if you can even interview this author. I don't know if you've read it yet or if your listeners or callers have read it yet. It's called Southern Horrors, Women in the Politics of Rape and Lynching. And it has some really interesting information here, especially when it comes to the strategies of white women, and how they cloak themselves under quote unquote black causes in order to appear liberal, when you dig underneath, they actually hold a whole host of white supremacist views. In addition, in the book, it mentions that there was white supremacist fundamental principle that was of interest, but it didn't go deeper into what that was. And then there's another part where it talks about there's white supremacist, the use of white supremacist terminology. They didn't, again, go deeper into that. But it would be interesting to find out what those fundamental principles are under white supremacy and what are the white supremacist terminologies, because I think that would be helpful in all areas of life so that we can get a better understanding of what is meant when they talk a certain way. So that would be the tip. The author is Crystal N. Seamster. Last name spelled F as in Frank, E as in Echo, I as in Igloo, M as in Monster, S as in Sierra, T as in Tommy, E as in Echo, and R as in Randy. I've done my own version of these phonics with the letters, but again, it's a really interesting read. So that's the tip of the day. It goes in line with Know Your Enemy. And then off to the experience of the day. So I just missed a portion of the call or what was said earlier, but I did hear something to the fact of someone being in a newsletter, but their name wasn't input into that newsletter, if I heard correctly.
Well, the previous caller down in Florida, he was talking about they had, I guess, Bring Your Children to Work Day, and they were taking some photographs that they were going to use in the newsletter. And this particular caller has mentioned the newsletter a few times where they were taking photographs of him to put him in the newsletter, I think on three different occasions. And he felt that it was with racist intent that this company, the place where he works, they might have been facing some accusations of having mistreated some of the non-white employees, and they wanted to have evidence that, hey, you know, what are we talking about? We celebrate, you know, diversity and our wonderful employees, all of them, all shades. And look at our newsletter. We have celebrated this one employee here has been in here three times. And then we had all these little beautiful Negro children in the building, that sort of thing. He felt like that's how they were using the newsletter, or that's at least the impression that I've gotten. I don't know if that's quite, is that the same pattern that you were noticing?
Yes. The curious thing of racial staging. that's pretty common. In fact, thank you, Gus, for elaborating and adding clarity to what's occurred. Because it falls in line with something that similarly happened to me today. At the school that I have the contract at, one of the EAs there showed me, she said, oh, you know, guess what? Check out this yearbook. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she's showing me the pictures and everything. And I'm like, oh, okay. And the school is not diversified. I mean, literally, there's only two black teachers, and they're both females in this school, in this entire school. Well, actually, one's a teacher and one's an EA. So it's technically one black teacher and one black EA, both females, black females in this school. And what was really interesting was when she showed me the pictures, she goes, oh, is that you in the picture? And I'm like, what? And I took a closer look, and they took a picture of me and placed it in their yearbook. So I guess that makes the count, according to them, as three black people in that school, even though technically I'm third party. I'm not even an employee there. So the racial staging is strong. That's in their arsenal to as a technique to make it seem as if they are diversified when they're really not. The other thing too, and I don't know if your caller is aware of this, because I'm curious to hear his or her interpretation of this, but I don't recall giving consent to have my image in that yearbook. The teacher never asked for my consent. The EA never asked for my consent. I really don't know who took the picture. I could only presume that it was either the teacher or the EA, but that none of them got my consent. The school doesn't have a signed consent. So, you know, I'm just really, you know, even though I'm not going to, this is a battle that I'm not going to, you know, be bothered with because the contract's almost over with. But I'm just curious as to whether the caller was given a consent to utilize their image in the newsletter, because it seems as if they feel they could just, you know, take your image and plaster it anywhere they want. So that would be a curious thing to find out. Thanks for listening to my call, and I'll leave my line.
Be in the six. Our caller in Florida, it seems one time at least there was an award attached to your presence in the newsletter, but did they get consent or your permission every time that they had you in the newsletter?
Like meaning like when they used one of my pictures or something?
Right.
I did not get asked about that because ever since I've been there, they have it for the most part where people will submit images for things that they want to have showcased into the documents. And the thing is that, like, whenever they'll use my image or any other employee's image, it's the same image that's from our, I guess, like our name tags, like our badges. It's those same template images. And I forgot to mention this. Like, here's the kicker. That, like, that same white woman, she's the one putting together the newsletters.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. Wow. Wow. Again, it is not Master's Plantation, apparently, here at the courthouse. Ma'am's Plantation. Wow. Weaponized the newsletter, clowning at the company meetings. I don't even have to remember the niggers' names or introduce them. And then, wow. And then she could come around and do her little, I'll give you 50 for the stamps, I reckon. Clowning. And pay attention again for newsletter use. And that's even worse. Like, there's no submission. Like, that's like, that's just like a jack. Like, you're not even asking. Like, you know, I thought they were coming to, like, give you an award and, like, a fake check or a fruit basket or something. And, oh, you know, we'll pose and do a picture and all that. Like, they're just going and taking the stock photo from your badge and putting it, like, man, like, the tackiness abounds. Other folks that are with us, did we miss anybody? Anybody that we missed totally that had a hand up that wanted to share?
Q&A queue is cleared.
Oops. That was a whoops. I did see another hand. You might have to press *61 if you dialed in with a hand up, because I might have, I did hit the incorrect button. Did we press *61? Just press *61. There you go. Great job. Press *61 if you had a hand up and your line is still muted, because I did hit the wrong button. Sorry, I am a victim of white supremacy and my finger slipped. Did we miss anybody? Anybody that has a hand up that we missed completely?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how you guys? How's everybody doing? Won't say I'm happy to be on the line because racism does not make me happy, but I'm glad we all come together and try to come up with some constructive solutions. I just had a few things I wanted to say. I called in probably 3 weeks ago, I believe it was, and I was wondering, or I posed the question as to what possibly could be the agenda that I felt I was seeing to having so many black men be firefighters. And I referenced a new movie that just came out, Fahrenheit 451, which is based on a book, and the lead character is a firefighter who's played by Michael B. Jordan, a non-white black male. And I also noted that there seemed to be an increase in black male firefighters being recruited in my own city. I'm in Buffalo, New York. And I put that into my brain computer, and what it spit out to me was that this could possibly be a part of the gentrification agenda, because there's a lot of gentrification happening in my city right now, where black people, victims of white supremacy, are being removed from their living spaces by white people. And a part of what led me to that reasoning is that I believe, and what I learned about what happened with gentrification in Harlem and New York City, is that there was a lot of fires. So there's been a lot of fires locally. Buffalo was known as like a steel town, a big factory place, and one big factory that's been sitting vacant for years, probably for as long as I've been alive, I'm almost 30 now, suddenly caught on fire about a month ago. And there's been no news about it. There's been no coverage as to what started the fire. It's just suddenly, all of a sudden, this building was on fire. And I know that in New York City and Harlem, that a part of their gentrification agenda was this fire starting to, as a cheaper alternative to getting rid of buildings. So I'm still pondering about it and seeing how plausible that could be, and still wondering how constructive it is for me to even be thinking about that. But the other thing I wanted to mention is about the clip that you played in terms of black men and black women's wage and income gaps and wealth gaps and things like that. And it's interesting because actually today, this morning, I had a conversation with my father, whom I've been estranged from for years, probably since I was maybe 12 or 13. Like I said, I'm almost 30 now. This is the first conversation I've had with him in those many years. And I can't recall if it was either yourself or Elder Neely Fuller who mentioned, like, when you have a conversation with a non-white person, typically a black person, at some point the conversation is going to turn to racism. At some point, they're going to be venting or complaining or expressing that they have an issue with something, and it's going to be mentioned that race is a part of it. And during that conversation, like I said, we haven't talked in years, and that was immediately race and racism came up, where he was complaining about being discriminated against, and he recalled being a 17-year-old. He's a welder, so he had a trade. He recalls being a 17-year-old welder, fresh out of high school, and experiencing racism, and it being something that was completely foreign to him and something that kind of turned him into a different person in terms of his negative view about race and racism and white supremacists and the entire system. So I just thought that was interesting and something to note. And I felt that it was poignant for me to mention that and for all of us to be cognizant in our counter racism, to pass that knowledge on to our children, which is what I tried to do with my daughter, because she is at the age where she's learning and knowing the understanding that she's being mistreated or treated unfairly, or she's noticing that non-white people, black people, are being victimized, and she's not quite understanding why. So I try to keep in mind that I have the knowledge and that we should pass it on to the younger generations. And with that, I'll mute my line. Thanks, everybody.
Much obliged. Just watch that word fair, certainly. Be mindful of that, or unfair. Very sorry to hear about the estrangement from your father, but that is certainly by white supremacist design. In fact, talking about the damage and the repercussions to your father, him recognizing racism as a young person, that prior and making him a different person, that probably has a lot to do with the estrangement between the two of you over the duration of your time on the planet, a few decades or so. But that is very, very common, very tragic as well, but very common. I'm glad you all were able to have some dialogue, hopefully constructive. You were talking about racism. That sounds constructive. And hopefully there'll be more dialogue to come. Heard that very often, though. Lots of black children. That's in Isabel Wilkerson, The Warmth of Other Suns, top five, Gus T. Renegade's top five book list, where she said that so many of the black people that she talked to that were older, or even older than your father, that they had never talked about all the experiences, racist experiences that they had, and things that, particularly things that happened to them on the job, not talking about those instances with their children, or just not talking about them at all. And they hadn't talked about those things for years. It was tons of workplace racism incidents all throughout The Warmth of Other Suns. About the fire department, I don't know. I can only say it would be interesting if they are recruiting. There's a difference between recruiting and hiring, right? I think the term that you used was they are recruiting black people. It's been my experience, certainly a retired firefighter can speak to this better than I, that whites tend to be very, very stingy about employing black people for the fire department. I mean, it's lawsuits like all across what they call the country with fire departments not having very many black people and not wanting to hire black people and then terrorizing the black people, the few that they do hire. So that would be very noteworthy if they're actually hiring black people in Buffalo or anywhere else in what they call the United States. But yeah, to my knowledge, that whites are very, very stingy about giving up fire department jobs to Negroes and have been for a very, very long time. Did folks have commentary? Any other folks have commentary on what has been discussed thus far or have their own situation? Any of the folks that we missed? Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers and listeners on the line. I want to echo Drake Dominia's sentiments. You know, congratulations on your yoga training, and I also wish you the best. Man, my favorite subject, black male privilege. The stat that you brought up in New York about 3,000 more, man, white people, they are just something else. They are just terrible. You can't, like, just, I mean, if you want to be accurate, you can't just, which they don't want to be, just throw out stats like that without context, right? So you're talking about, you know, 3,000 more. Well, first of all, that could be because the men there, they may have jobs that are more strenuous than the ones that the women have. And on top of that, I would also like to see, like in general, black men, they get more, their wages are higher, but black women have more jobs. So I would like to know what the unemployment rate is for men and women in New York. And I wouldn't be surprised that just as it is in the country as a whole, that if in New York more women, more black women have jobs than black men. So you gotta, you know, look at those particulars there instead of just sitting here saying that, oh, you know, the black women get, I mean, the black men get more money. I doubt very seriously that that is the case. And as far as that MASA comment, in my view, MASA is racist man, racist woman, and racist child. So they all MASA. And that was it. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Much obliged. Much obliged. Did we miss anybody else? Is there anybody else who has a hand up that we have totally missed? Spectacular. If you again, now I did have a finger slip earlier, so if you pressed *61 and you are not unmuted, just press *61 again and I will unmute your line. My bad if I, you know, messed anything up, and you have ample opportunity. No excuse. Just press *61 and I will unmute your line immediately. I think we nabbed everybody, or at least I don't hear anyone shouting out. I don't see any hands. Other folks have commentary.
Hi, Gus.
Oh, yes, ma'am. B in the six.
Hi, Gus. It's B again.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I just wanted to, I was just listening to Ivy, and it's quite interesting. It actually brought up a point that I've been meaning to mention. In the fact that in the States, you're able to get data pertaining to how each of the ethnic classes or ethnic groups are faring economically, including communities, black communities or non-white, non-black communities, and being able to make that comparison among the data. Here in Canada, we used to be able to do that, but in our census report, they have it now where there's only two categories. There's one that is racialized and one that is non-racialized. So the non-racialized category is for white, and the racialized is for everybody else. So all the ethnic groups, including black communities, or black, Asian, Pacific Islander, what have you, they're all amalgamated, and it's wrapped up. So if I wanted to find out about, you know, something as simple as what is the median household income within the black community, I wouldn't be able to get that information because it's under that racialized group, under the Canadian census. So I thought it was pretty interesting. It's something I got to look further into, but yeah, the data here is pretty hard to come by.
Wow, that's sophisticated white supremacy. I think France is similar, where they do not do that flagrant, or they have the classifications, but they just don't chart all that data, so you can't get access to that sort of information. They're all about egalitarian, and we don't do all of that. It sounds very similar, and I mean, that one, they don't even have white and non-white, racialized, and not, I mean, come on, that system of white supremacy, word masters. And that creates so much confusion because there they've moved it off color at all. Racialized, what does that even mean? Talking about white supremacy, mistreating individuals who are classified as not white. That's what we're talking about. They don't want anything that's even close to describing it in that manner. I do not see other folks that we missed completely, I don't think. Stacy in the UK. 3:19 a.m. Friday morning. Did you have additional comments you wanted to make sure you get in?
Yeah, I've got 2 points and I'll try and be quick. I'll do my delectable Negro comment first, because I don't think we've had one in a couple of weeks. I guess around about this time last year, actually, I had a meeting with an external organization that's coming in to do a presentation on a project that they wanted to involve the organization that I'm working with. And I led the meeting, and I had 2 other colleagues from work, 2 white males. Who work in different teams, but because of the nature of the project that was being discussed, it touched on the work that they do. So they were also part of the meeting. Now, at the end of it, I went to speak to one of them to get his view, because I showed the people out of the building, and so I had to go and find each person that I was working with at their desk. So I went to one of them and asked him his view. And the first thing, and I'm expecting him to give me a comment back about the project and all his views on the organisation. The first thing he said was, oh, in fact, this was the only thing he had to offer. Oh, I was just looking at this black male. And I was just puzzling for the whole meeting how old he was, because his skin, it was just so smooth. And I guess he's an older male, isn't he? But how old do you think he is? And I just, sorry, I just looked at him thinking, what the hell? You have nothing to offer about this topic of the meeting. And why the hell do you care what this male's age is? And why would you be noticing? And this black male is an ex-Olympian. No, sorry, I think, sorry, gold medal winner for the Commonwealth Games. And I think he's in some of the world championships as well for the particular sport he's in. And I had no idea how old he was. And I did look it up afterwards because of the stupid question, but I didn't obviously provide this information. And he's in his 60s now. He does look very young. But I was thinking, why the hell is this the only thing that you have to contribute? And funny enough, I had to catch up with this black male later on, and he was actually quite annoyed. And I was asking him some questions, and he responded to me in, you know, in a way which suggested he didn't find the meeting particularly useful. And I think he noted that this person was acting as if he didn't even want to be in this room, the white male that I was referencing. And I found myself kind of having to cover over the detachment that was obviously there. And I noted it, and I was trying to compensate because it was just rude apart from anything else, you know. But obviously I couldn't agree with the black male. I just kept it focused on the discussion. But anyway, yeah, so that was the delectable Negro moment. And then the other point I want or experience I wanted to share was, and I guess it kind of links to the last story in the sense that sometimes we're in jobs, and very often we're in jobs, and we're presented with things which are quite clearly racist. And or you have very, very deep suspicions that it's an act of racism, and how as non-white people sometimes we are put in positions where we're having to challenge the practice, which, you know, puts you in a difficult position. And it's just something, I guess, on an individual basis we have to deal with in the moment. But I guess it's just to be aware of these kind of situations. But again, this is years ago. I was working on a project, and it is a project that I've spoken about before in terms of some of the racism that I've encountered. But yeah, I was managing a project, and it's an external organization that was delivering the project. But I had oversight of what they were doing. And it was aimed at getting local people into work. And because of the amount of funding that was going to the organization, we set the framework for how the project would be delivered. And for every person that was supported on a project, the organisation could spend up to £10,000 per person to move them into work or some kind of outcome that was helping them to improve their employment prospects. Now, there was a young person, and obviously this is a deprived area, so hence why the particular project was taking place. Now, there was a young person who had got into Oxford University. However, she came from a single parent, and in fact, her mother was white Jewish and her dad was black, but I think she lived with her mother as a single parent. And she had got into Oxford doing really well, but she hadn't started as yet. And yes, you get into these kinds of institutions, but actually the cost of entering these kind of institutions and you know, accessing all the opportunities that are presented to you, in inverted commas, are opportunities, but there's a cost to it that is not just associated with the entry fees. she probably got a scholarship, but she still had to find a lot of money to help out. So she wanted to get £10,000 towards her tuition and the rest of the fees. And the person who was heading up the project was blocking it. And I think he called me, or she'd made me aware of it, or something was going on. But it came to my attention. And so I had to call him and say, why are you not giving her this funding? Oh, but I don't think she's the type of person we should be supporting. Why not? I don't think she needs the help. Of course she needs the help. She's got into university and she's not going to be able to maintain it if she doesn't get the grant. But I don't think she's the type of person, so I said, give her the grant. And I have a feeling, because I'm going back a long time, but he went to director that I, of the organisation I was working to, and I'm sure he raised it with the director. And then it was being discussed with me as to whether or not this grant should be given to this girl. And I said, well, why not? And in the end, I had to give her the grant. And the point is, why would you try and block a young person who's obviously on her way to doing well, because she's got into university, got into one of the most prestigious universities, not top university in the UK, from a deprived background? And what's your rationale that you don't give her the grant, she fails, and then she becomes statistic, and then you can determine whether or not you want to give her the grant or not? What could be the rationale? Anyway, they had to give her the money because he couldn't come up with any other excuse as to why not. But yeah, it's just these situations that we're presented with, and you have to end up sometimes challenging the racism that you're confronted with. And I'm sure that's probably part of my extra prideful character traits that makes me a target in many of the organisations that I work for. But hey ho, Gus, I'll mute my line there.
Context of white supremacy, asking questions, very important. Sometimes that'll be the only self-defense that you have in a workplace environment. They don't want to give her the grant for school. Why not? Then you just keep asking why until you get a logical answer. And it seems in that case they didn't have one, probably because they didn't want to give it to her, just as an act of racism, which we've said consistently on this program. Whites, they look worldwide. They look for opportunities just to mistreat you. It's not that you did anything wrong. It's not that this was provoked. They enjoy mistreating black people. That is a core component of white identity, racism, white supremacy. Individuals classified as white, it is their pleasure to abuse black people. Either it's true or it's not. Are there other, or I think we got everybody. I'll double check to make sure we didn't miss anyone. Are there other folks who had comments, suggestions that they wanted to share before we have about 30 minutes left in the broadcast?
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer.
Hi. I have one more thing. I guess this sort of fits in workplace racism. This is my son's experience at summer camp. So I guess it's kind of like his work right now. So he goes to a predominantly black summer camp, and there is a white male at his summer camp, about 10 years old, he says. And this white male has been cursing at the instructors, who are predominantly black. They have mostly educational assistants in the summer camp. It's the Milwaukee Public School summer camp. And so he's cursing at the black females, calling them effing bees. He today called somebody, I guess he called them burnt. He's been calling children out of their names. And really been very nasty, and predictably, because of the terrorism that we've been under for the past 4 or 5 centuries, that black teachers at this school are coddling him, are taking time out of their day to sit him down, let him do whatever he wants to do. So my son's been noticing this and sort of taking notes, and kind of staying away from them.
With that, I'll mute my line.
Genius of a son. What they say, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but that is extremely intelligent, both the observation that this is happening, and then I'm going to keep my distance from this little race soldier urchin. Brilliant. Brilliant. And that is no surprise at all. The most important comment, I forgot, I thought white people were ignorant about racism. How does this 10-year-old, does he sound ignorant about what it means to be classified as white? Anyway, and another reminder, if you have offspring, you should for sure be talking to your children about white supremacy racism. Again, failure to do so, you are in dereliction of your duty as an attempted parent. All that said, those black educators that are being terrorized by this little white urchin, and they're just, you know, putting him to the side and giving him extra juice and orange slices and chill out and take a little time out to yourself till you can get it together. That right there says a lot about the system of black male privilege at work. I don't know if it was black male staff or black female staff, but that says a lot about the system of white supremacy, that you have quote unquote adults who in their work capacity, a white child has them in check all the while terrorizing everyone. And that's I don't know if we have other educators here who have been in a similar situation where they've had white children and feeling like they could not, you know, discipline them the way that they would if it was a non-white child. Not even saying that you're going to do something incorrect, but I mean, just standard disciplinary. They have no problem suspending black children, right? If we have any educators who would like to share a comment on that, feel free. We do have time left. Other folks, if you have comments, suggestions, or your own situation you would like to share, line should be open.
Hi. May I guess?
Can I be heard?
Let's see. Wow. Draftomania. We'll try to get everybody.
I'll go last. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Okay. I just wanted to, thank you, Gus. I just wanted to talk about a workplace racism that I witnessed at this event on Saturday. There was one of my a non-white DJ that was playing at this event, and it was an event where there was the facility that these white folks were supposedly letting them use. So I witnessed the white DJ on the set, unplugged the DJ's, the non-white DJ's set. He kicked them off the set almost like a half an hour before this time, before he was supposed to get off the set to finish playing. He kept interrupting him as he was playing, telling him his music was loud. He then started setting up before the time he was supposed to go on, before the guy even got finished playing the set. He started unplugging his equipment and set up. He set his DJ set right in front of him as he was playing, and basically just like totally. I mean, it was just an outright total disrespect. It's like they won't let them use their venue and won't let us participate in their venue, but then they will, of course, everything we do, they steal it, and then they'll try to act like, you know, it's theirs. And then it's like they just want to take over everything. It was just totally so-called, it was so blatant. But it was, the good thing was, is that I had an opportunity to talk to other non-white people about racism. So that was the constructive thing. And I think the gentleman, because the non-black, non-white people were very upset about what was going on. But so we had an opportunity to have constructive conversation about racism on the job. And the guy, he did conduct himself in a very codified manner, even though he doesn't, you know, have any, you know, he doesn't know anything about Nolly Fuller or anything like that. And that's all. I'll mute my line.
Always great when you can take advantage of an incident like that to kind of deconstruct. This is how white people operate. This is how white supremacy operates. One and the same. There were a bevy of individuals who spoke up. Red in Nevada, did you have additional commentary?
I'll go last. I think B
says she has some other things to say, and then I'll go last. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate that. Toronto, B, did you have commentary?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Red Nevada. For the contract that I'm doing, I work in the school. So I'm one-to-one support for a student. And I work alongside with the educator education assistants as well that are in the classroom. So going back to disciplinary measures and how they are distributed in a very unreasonable way. So there's four Black children that are in the classroom. There's one Asian child or non-Black, non-white child, and the remainder are white children. So what usually happens, and it's not just in the schools that I see it, I also see it in the group homes and just about where, if it's dealing with children, just about where any white children are, it's pretty much a pattern. There is more emphasis or there's more leniency towards the white children. So if a white child is hitting another child, the teachers will either turn away, it be either teachers or even staff or even hospital staff, if they're like dealing with eating disorders or whatnot, they'll turn a blind eye, they will minimalize or trivialize the situation, usually with hitting or with calling another child by a racial slur. But the most minuscule thing, I find, the Black children bear the brunt of it. And I myself, has stepped in and has mentioned, well, you know, this particular child did not do anything wrong, and it's pertaining to a Black child. So you'll hear a teacher yelling at this Black child saying, oh, you're talking again. Okay, mind you, the teacher didn't see the Black child talking. The teacher's back is turned, but they're accusing this Black child of talking when it's actually a white child talking. And I've had to actually go up to the educator and say, look, no, it's this child that was talking, not that child. It happens a lot. Even in the group home, you'd have a white child, usually a female, that will accuse a staff member of trying to do something sexually inappropriate. It is not true. The staff would be aware that this particular child is prone to storytell. Mind you, an investigation would ensue, but usually the staff member would be out of pay and would be subject to a rigorous investigation, and then come to find out that the whole ordeal wasn't true. But because it's used in their arsenal to, you know, if they feel they're going to get in trouble or they feel they want to retaliate, this is one of the things that they do. In some cases, it's true, but in a lot of cases, they retaliate by claiming that, you know, they've been sexually abused or they've been hit, and none of this has occurred. For instance, I've been accused that one time that a client has accused me that I've hit them, and none of it's occurred. Now, luckily, I had witnesses, and this was in a school. Luckily, I had witnesses to say that this was not the case, but I really worry for others, and this was by a white person. So I worry for others to undergo, that type of situation as well. And it happens. So the disciplinary is there, but then I find that also, in particular, white children have a retaliatory tactic of making up the lies to see if they can get staff in trouble as well. And oftentimes the investigations there, And sometimes they're believed. You know, it's very scary. It's a very scary thing. So I hope I wasn't too long-winded. I'll leave my line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. I don't know if people remember the incident. It was like 2015. About 2015, give or take a year. It was in Arizona. I do remember that. It was a black male teacher, white student. He was about 11. And they had a video of this. I remember watching the video. The white 11-year-old called the black, and this black educator looked big. He looked every bit over 6 feet, over 200, muscular. Like, you know, he spent some time in the gym. He did not look frail at all. That little white urchin walked right up to him in the middle of the class. Uh-huh. Nigger. Mm-hmm. Did not blink, didn't flinch. He didn't look at all intimidated. The black educator slammed him on the ground. And we talked about composure. Slammed him on the ground and, you know, all that. It became a big, ugly story. I played the video before, but this was in Arizona a while back. And even some whites who were looking at the situation before they could even get into their, you know, I can't believe that happened and such and such and such and such. They said, oh, yeah, that white child should be disciplined. And I'm certain that his parents have been saying nigger around the house. Where would he get such information from? Of course, they're not ignorant about racism. Red in Nevada, did you have commentary you wanted to share? Thank you for your patience.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to share again. One other thing that I forgot to add on with my commentary was that with the black female, because it was a black female who I had helped, I was told by the supervisor, and just going back to some of the commentary that I've said over the weeks, how the supervisor, she kind of, you know, tries to do this whole giving me compliments, how much we're alike, this, that, and the other, really saying some, I think it's, I wish I could really find out where she used to work, because one of the reoccurring themes is that, oh, well, people don't really know how, that people aren't really hardworking out here, and, you know, where I used to work, you know, they didn't really care much, not like you, and, you know, we're this, that, and the other, just, you know, and like I said before, whenever she's saying these type of things, it's like, I understand that. She also told me, because of how well I'm doing, I'll be able to work at the company for as long as I want. And I almost wanted to laugh in her face, but, you know, I was laughing in my mind, like, you don't know that. It doesn't matter. It could take one bad day. And it's like, you know, I'll work until my lunch break, and then my stuff will be packed up, and I'll be out the door. But she had told me, the white manager had told me, she had sat me by this black female to help her with, you know, her work. So maybe she could kind of get some of the same tactics that I use to be more efficient and what have you. So it's kind of, so that's why I'm kind of like, you know, confused about, of course, which, you know, it's not often mean to be confused. But it's like I've still been holding back with helping the black female because, again, she seems to be real talkative around these suspected races, and I definitely don't want to get too involved. But then also just knowing the fact that I was sat by her on purpose, and so I don't even know, maybe if she doesn't improve, if that will also then fall back on me. There was something else. Oh, yes. The other thing I know, it's been mentioned before on workplace races, and I'll just echo it again, just making sure to do something outside of work. And I know I've been basically just going to work and coming back to my residence, but it's so hot. I know, Gus, and congratulations with your teacher, yoga teacher training. I forgot to mention that, but it's 106 degrees outside, so it's kind of hard. Sometimes if I try to do a walk, I can only literally walk for 15 minutes, but just really also trying to, you know, we as victims need to find other avenues to kind of release some of that stress. I like to cook, and then also that could help us, you know, I know when I eat better, I feel better even at work and, you know, getting better sleep and stuff like that. So just wanted to reiterate that. Thank you for allowing me to share again.
Indeed.
Stacy, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, it was just on the back of the discussion around the children. And it reminded me of when my daughter was really young. She was probably about three, but when she was young, I used to, like to go on to the school trips, things like that. And she would have been at nursery at this time. And I think you probably have them in the US as well, because I think it's probably a concept that came over to the UK. But you have those, I guess, indoor play areas, and they have lots of different sections of a big hall or something, which is padded, and you've got balls, lots of plastic balls and other sort of sponge type and trampolines and things like that that children can climb into and just run around and not hurt themselves. And my daughter was there, and there were obviously lots of other children with them. But there was also other parents in the place that were not part of the group. And there was one mother, I don't know if you have the yummy mummy phenomenon in the US, but basically where you've got an area in particular that's gentrified, you'll have a mix of parents from different backgrounds, and I guess there's more middle class white mums in particular tend to get called yummy mummies in the UK. And there was one such person in this playhouse, and I watched her because I was at the table for a while, just letting my daughter play and just observing what was going on. And I watched this child run around the place, taking toys off of other children, punching them, kicking them, and doing all kinds of things. And the mother was probably like two or three steps behind the child and did not intervene once. And this little boy probably hit two or three, if not more, children. And, you know, like actually get into sort of some sort of physical conflicts, and then just with others, just taking their toys off of them and just running around. And as soon as he's got the toy or, you know, push somebody out of the way, he'd move on to the next. And I watched this go on for about 20 minutes, and she did not intervene once, didn't bat an eyelid, you know. And I thought, this is a little supremacist in training. And this is how a mother allows her child to do that. She's actually training him to be a leader, a supremacist. And so I called my daughter over. Now, he actually didn't go anywhere near her, but I called her over.
Are you still with us, Stacy? Not hearing you. Oh, hope you didn't have disconnect. Are you still with us, Stacy? Not hitting you?
Gus, can you hear me?
Okay, got you back. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry. I don't know when I...
You said you
when
picked
you stopped
your,
hearing me.
You said you picked your daughter up. He didn't come anywhere near her?
Yeah, so he didn't come anywhere near her, but I did call her over. And I told her, if that child hits you, you hit him back. Now, it probably wasn't the wisest thing to do, but I would have dealt with the mother if anything had happened. But I, you know, that wasn't necessarily my style as a parent, but I observed this mother and I was quite disgusted by it. He didn't hit her. She would have been able to, you know, if he had hit her, she'd probably knocked him out, even though I think he was slightly older. But, yeah, it was just the observation of this mother training her son. And at the time, I guess I thought, yeah, that's how they train them up to be leaders. I didn't, the sort of racism aspect didn't, or supremacist aspect was there in my assessment of the situation, but I didn't kind of codify it in that way. But that's exactly what I was looking at. But yeah, I'll mute my line there, Gus.
They learn early. They, whites, race soldiers, they don't have any hesitation about talking to their children about racism accurately, honestly, and then they get to go out and apply what they have learned. last 10 minutes. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to make sure they get in.
Oh, well, Gus, one last thing.
Be in Toronto.
Yes, I'll make it really quick. Another thing pertaining to the schools as well is that I would definitely encourage parents to really get involved and to not disclose so much information to teachers, because being in the environment, I would often hear, especially Black parents, you know, say, oh, well, I'm divorced or I'm a single parent and, you know, the family situation. It's the amount of information that is given is not required in the school. The teacher doesn't need to know that, you know, the parent is divorced. They don't need to know that the parent's a single parent. They don't need to know any of that, because what a lot of these teachers who, and the majority of them are white women that are hired in those schools, they will use them as weapons against your child. Also, another thing too is when you're talking to your children about inappropriate touch, be sure to include not only adults but other children, because I remember my son, when he was younger, there was a 7-year-old white girl that decided to practice kissing him in the playground. When I came to pick him up, now this is many years ago, but when I came to pick him up, he had told me about it. And I had sat and called for a meeting with the girl's parent. And the girl's parent told me that she was, the 7-year-old white girl is practicing her sexuality. And this was in front of the teacher, who was also white. And it struck me as odd that they didn't seem to be concerned saying this, but it really concerned me, because I did not want my child sexualized in that matter, especially at age 7. So what I told the teacher, what I told the parent was, you know, your child is free to practice on any teddy bear she wants, but not on my child. So please be sure to tell your children, you know, to inform you of touches from any other children, because the teachers tend to turn a blind eye to that too. So yes, I'll leave my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, B. Emmy in the DMV, good to hear from you. Did you have commentary, ma'am?
Greetings, everyone. I do, and I will definitely try to keep it really short. I had a lot to share, but I got on the call or was, you know, in a loud environment and couldn't speak. The first is I heard about a job at a hospital called patient sitting, and I didn't even know that that was like a legitimate thing where you literally get paid to sit with people who might be at risk for committing suicide or just need company as they're in a hospital. The reason I'm mentioning it is because a lot of times there are positions within healthcare that don't necessarily require that you have a lot of experience or any certification to at least begin, but they pay well and they provide opportunity for people to kind of get into something that they can stay at for a long time. So I'm mentioning this, and I've mentioned pharmacy technician, where you can get employed by a pharmacy and actually get, I think, 6 to 9 months of training and then sit for the test. I think most pharmacies are now demanding that their techs be nationally certified, but you'll learn everything that you need to at that level. So if you're looking for something, I think that's a great place, or two great places. I actually broke code last week, and the pharmacist who is identified as white but is really not white, he's the weird
person that I'm always talking about, he began a conversation, and I could tell from his tone about race, I got the entire race and racism. And I got the entire conversation recorded, but did not have the time to like go through it and pick out the juicy parts that I want to share with you. So I will attempt to do that to share with you on Thursday. It was constructive, and I broke the code of really going there, but was still codified in my interviewing of him and my responses that I did give to the questions he asked. But I did ask questions. And then lastly, I just happened to grab this one like yesterday while I was at the library. I was getting ready to like get my papers together. And let me pause before I tell the vignette. It is really, really constructive and helpful if you are able to be somewhat invisible. Doesn't mean that you just wear a potato sack or something, but if that no one can tell that you know as much as you know, and they assume that you are not listening, they assume that you don't, like, why would you, you know what I mean? White people can get really comfortable around Black people that they just think are stupid or that have no idea what's going on. And sometimes just by being quiet, that helps a lot. Like, just not talking and engaging in a lot of frivolous conversation, just being a quiet person, it was, I can use the metaphor, like being the spook who sat by the door in some type of way. But anyway, so this is how white people collude. There's this white man who works at the library. I don't know if he's a librarian or not, like what his technical title is. He is looking at the resume of who they're going to hire for some new position. A much younger, I want to say almost like intern librarian, white male, really hipster-ish, beard and all, is sitting like at the next spot area for them to sit behind the counter. And he begins to like talk about this person's resume, that he's so qualified that he might be unqualified because he's overqualified. So I made a note of that. Then he brought in the younger one, and who had nothing to do with the hiring process, this is whites colluding, to ask this person what he thought about this person's resume. The young hipster had nothing to do with hiring at all. And so the young hipster said that him having all this experience wasn't necessarily grounds for him being like unqualified or too qualified to at least get interviewed, but still, they stayed together and continued to look at this resume for at least 10 minutes. They looked at the time he had spent at one of his positions. This is them talking out loud and me being directly there. And him being there for 5 months was too little, and they thought something was bad. The interviewer felt jaded that he felt that he had gotten hired because he wouldn't leave the position, and that maybe this person with all these qualifications would want to leave the position when a better position came up. So he felt jaded that the only reason he had gotten the position is because he couldn't go anywhere because he's not as qualified as this other one, and thus didn't want to give this job or give this interview at least to this overqualified person. More than one white reviewers, even when he has, oh, that's the jaded, the hipster, they kept saying, fit for the environment, that is not necessarily about qualifications, but whether or not you're fit for the environment, that's quote. Another quote is good for the type of people that we are, quote, and then good for the type of environment that we are, and that they don't like that he didn't allow them to call his past employees, and they're going to do investigating. So they even figured out like, oh, well, if we call this person and triangulate, maybe we can speak with this person and they can say something in a way so we can figure out why he only stayed for 5 months or why he's leaving this job or whatever. So anyway, white people collude. Like, just because you don't see it with the white person you're working with, they're definitely colluding behind closed doors and figuring out and having conversation, even with white people who have nothing to do with your position or what you do at all. I have definitely talked long enough. Hopefully next week I can share with you all my recording. That would be super fantastic. And thank you all for listening.
Much obliged. Be refined. Work on your techniques, being able to be stealthy, getting to that recorder. You never know. Somebody's going to say something in your area where you can, bam, get it pressed, active, and then you have it, you know, for your records, if you can refer to it later or need to use it or what have you. But definitely have that in your counter-racist code for on the job, and just be mindful, be alert that, you know, those type of conversations could come up if you just want to listen.
and, you know, get notes, or if you want to ask questions so that you can try and extract as much information as possible. But certainly, certainly keep in mind, I think at all times, do not ever feel that you need to flex and show how much you know about any subject, racism or anything else, especially not with whites. I have not seen where that is of benefit at all. Definitely, I think you would do better. Dan Freeman, Spook Who Sat by the Door, the late Sam Greenlee, from the book club, no less. That will do it for the broadcast. We did our full 3 hours. We will be here tomorrow. Again, it is 1 hour earlier, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, because yoga teacher training started for Gus T, and it is immediately at the beginning, at the end of the book club tomorrow. So we will start 1 hour earlier for Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. Woo! So excited. Favorite book all time. We will continue tomorrow. Compensatory call in on Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have your shirt and you have worn it, you have got some results, you can feel free to share on Saturday. In fact, I can give you one right now. I got my new shirt that says, "Please treat me like I am a white person." Different. I wore it on Wednesday, not to yoga class. I take that back. I forgot I went to so many classes on Wednesday. So I did wear it to yoga class Monday or Wednesday morning. I did not wear it to teacher training, which was Wednesday evening. I wore it to class. Nobody said anything. I wore my other shirt repeatedly to class, so I don't know if they noticed the difference. I went to the grocery store. There was a black male patron in the grocery store. At this particular grocery store, I go there regularly. Black female employee works there as well. I'm walking in the aisle. I'm very indecisive. I had a hard time shopping for whatever reason. All of a sudden, I hear, "Gus, Gus." Black female who works there. I walk over. I see her regularly. I speak to her every time I go to the store if she's working. I walk over and she says, "Hi." She's cracking up laughing. She says, "The black guy over there, he just went and reported you to the staff, and he said that you were going around picking up items and not putting them back where they belong." And I looked at her and I'm just like, what in the world? Like, I don't even think I had picked up, you know, more than two items or what have, even if I had. I see whites, and I mean, you talk about white children, man, I see them doing that sort of thing all the time. But he went to snitch on me. She was cracking up laughing because she just came to tell me she thought it was funny, and asked, you know, if you've been going around messing up items in the store, and laughing and the whole nine. I just pointed at the shirt. This is why I wear it. I don't know. I think I did see this person and he did see me in the shirt. So I don't know if he was not a fan of the shirt. Again, this was a black male. We are victims of white supremacy. That is the sort of thing that I think whites want when we are going and ratting out other black people. He stole an extra piece of cornbread. Go get him. But victim of racism. I will continue to wear and see what happens. You can report on Saturday if you have your shirt and you have been wearing it out and about. That said, thanks everyone for participating. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Racists are terrorizing us worldwide. I think it would behoove us to really protect our health as best we can, our brain computers as best we can, so that we can think clearly, come up with new concepts, solutions to the problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. In addition to being sober, let's buckle up every single time that we are out and about in a vehicle, driver or passenger. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.